Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
It's Friday, May 5th. Hello, and thank you for choosing Africa Link. I'm Eunice Njiro.
With me, Wanjiko Mwaura, with your social media comments.
In today's program, the World Economic Forum Africa in Durban comes to an end. We'll hear from some of the participants.
I think the continent has benefited a lot from this forum. Indeed, the world has benefited a lot. And I see it continuing to play a very crucial role in how Africa develops into the future.
And a Rwandan women's rights activist is to stand against President Paul Kagame in the country's August election.
We'll be giving people the right to freedom of expression. Because as the way things stand now, it's even hard to address a problem you can't even talk about.
And what have you been saying on social media? All of this will be coming a little later.
So these stories and more, and coming up right after the news.
And I'm Mark Caldwell with the DW News. Unemployment in the United States, the world's biggest economy, has fallen to its lowest level in 10 years, following a strong rebound in job creation in April. The US Labor Department said on Friday that 211,000 new jobs were created last month, and the jobless rate fell to 4.4%. The UN Human Rights Chief Zeid Ra'ad Al Hussein has said that he will be seeking to persuade Ethiopia to allow his agency to investigate rights abuses during the months of unrest in the country in 2015 and 2016, in which hundreds of people were killed. Speaking to journalists during a three-day visit to Ethiopia, he said there was a clear need for a much wider and freer civic space.
Although I benefited greatly from the briefings provided to me by the Attorney General's office, the extremely large number of arrests, over 26,000, suggests it is unlikely rule of law guarantees have been observed in every case.
In parliamentary elections in Algeria, the party of President Abdelaziz Bouteflika and its coalition ally have won a clear majority, according to preliminary results released on Friday. Bouteflika's National Liberation Front, the FLN, which has dominated Algerian politics since independence from France in 1962, won 164 of the 462 seats in the National Assembly. The FLN's ally, the Rally for National Democracy, won 97 seats. Two opposition Islamist lists won 48 seats between them. This news comes to you from DW, Germany's international broadcaster. The United States military said on Friday that a service member has been killed in Somalia during an operation against the militant Islamist group Al-Shabaab. The military service member was struck by small arms fire while conducting an advise and assist mission alongside the Somalia National Army. Two US troops were wounded in the same incident. In Britain, early results on Friday showed that Prime Minister Theresa May's Conservatives performed strongly in yesterday's local elections, dealing a blow to the main opposition Labour Party. Britain goes to the polls in a snap general election in just under 5 weeks' time. Senior Conservative politician Ian Duncan-Smith.
I think the party is happy and that we're making gains, which is good. I don't think we want to overread this or extrapolate it across the general election. This is a good, solid night for the Conservatives, but it doesn't bode anything for the general election.
For more news and information, please visit our website, dw.com. I'm Mark Caldwell.
You're listening to Africa Link with me, Eunice Wanjiru.
And me, Wanjiko Mwaura.
The three-day conference of the World Economic Forum Africa in Durban, South Africa, drew to a close on Friday with participants expressing their satisfaction that the main issues for the continent's inclusive economic growth had been tackled. They now want to see urgent action taken by all role players to bring about the speedy upliftment of the poor and the marginalised on the African continent. Sobri Govender reports.
The participants included not just the political and government leaders, but also top business personalities and civil society representatives. Most of them agree that the conference had tackled one of the main issues for the promotion of rapid and inclusive economic growth on the continent. So, the next agenda would be the empowerment of women in all sectors and the provision of opportunities for the youth to become entrepreneurs and job creators. I talked to a number of entrepreneurs attending the conference. Abe Omi Awobokun is a top businessman from Lagos in Nigeria.
I think the continent has benefited a lot from this forum. Indeed, the world has benefited a lot. And I see it continuing to play a very crucial role in how Africa develops into the future.
Paul Ekomo, a Kenyan entrepreneur, says while the forum has provided an opportunity for the different role players to interact and discuss solutions, it is now time to implement the joint actions. The economic gap in Africa is widening and has to be addressed urgently.
I think for me, the success will now move beyond just individual members and individual businesses to the World Economic Forum as a community begin to take action on some of the things that they do. A friend of mine once told me that a beautiful island, which is surrounded by a sea of poverty, will always pollute the island. If you saw the report that was done by Oxfam the other day, in fact, right now they said in South Africa, 3 billionaires own as much as 24 million people in this country.
Kennedy Ododo, another entrepreneur from Kenya, warns there is a danger of excluding the youth from the economic gains as the youth population in the continent is bursting.
We have to be careful and look out very carefully about the surge of young people. In Africa, they're going to be almost over 70% in 2030. You know, that means that we need to create jobs, you know, entrepreneurship, you know, and to create a space whereby people can even be helped to start their own businesses. That's how we can fight this thing.
A social scientist from the University of Zimbabwe, Zimbarasne Moyo, is of the view that inclusive economic growth can only be achieved through collective action.
The next step now is for different heads of states, for different people in the private sector, in the public sector, to now come up with concrete action plans. Then everything else follows from there.
All the stakeholders in the forum agreed that inclusive economic growth is a must for Africa's development. There's a general acknowledgement that failure to provide opportunities for the eradication of inequality, poverty, and unemployment will only lead to destabilized societies and communities in several parts of the continent.
Subri Govender in Durban.
Over to the social media comments. One of Africa's most influential business leaders and philanthropists, Tony Elumelu, said at the conference that is, if we tackle power and energy issues, we deal with poverty. We empower small businesses who create jobs. We help entrepreneurs. Another comment from Bashi Morake says, but if the approach of our African leaders is not at par with the intentions of the World Economic Forum, then Africa will have failed.
Thank you, Njiko. Now, moving on, the two French presidential candidates, Emmanuel Macron and Marine Le Pen, today wrapped up their presidential campaign. French voters will head to the polls on Sunday to elect a new president. The polls show Macron leading by about 20%. But the centrists should not celebrate as yet. As our correspondent Fanny Fetcher found out, there are a number of young people in support of the far-right candidate Marine Le Pen.
I'm headed to a young supporter of Marine Le Pen, Julie Apressina, 25. She's rushing off, busy organizing the last stretch of Le Pen's campaign. How to convince others to vote for her? Strategies are discussed right here at a regional office of the Front National, Le Pen's far-right party. Their most important message, the Front National, is totally normal. If it were a racist or nationalist party, I would not be here. To me, it's about patriotism to be part of the Front National, and there's nothing wrong about being patriot. We love our country, we love our flag, our history, our customs, and we have to keep them alive. Being patriotic is in vogue, but should patriotism exclude certain groups of people? Le Pen's brand of patriotism does. Immigrants are not welcome, Julie's father is an immigrant from Italy.
L'immigration italienne, portugaise, espagnole.
The difference is people from Italy, Portugal, Spain, they know how to integrate, but that's not the case with the people who arrive now.
Et là, c'est pas le cas.
Barcy is a social worker. She grew up here, but instead of nationalism, she has a different idea to help the youth. One should do more for the education of young people that helps in finding a job. Her dreams are the same as Julie's in Cher, to have more stability, more jobs. But a vote for Le Pen is a vote of fear, she says. When it comes to the future of France, she doesn't know who to vote for.
DW's Fanny Fetcher.
Nene Eve, commenting on the French election, says Emmanuel Macron was just 5 years old when Paul Biya was sworn in as the president of Cameroon. Now Macron is 39 years old and might be elected on Sunday, while Paul Biya, at 84 years, is still the president. Isn't that amazing, she asks.
Now, back to the African continent and Rwanda in particular, Diane Rwigara, a women's rights activist, said she would stand against President Paul Kagame in the country's August election. She is the fourth candidate to enter the race, but the first female independent candidate. The 35-year-old accountant said she would work to eradicate poverty, injustice and promote freedom if elected. But how does she plan to do that? DW's Bruce Amani put this question to her.
We need to be able to talk about the many issues facing our country. What I will be offering will be giving people the right to freedom of expression. Because as the way things stand now, it's even hard to address a problem you can't even talk about. What needs to be done first before we even start addressing the problems is being able to be open about them, to talk about them.
How can you describe the political environment towards the coming elections? Are you confident that every candidate will get equal chances?
I'm optimistic that our government will realize that things cannot go on the way they are. You cannot keep people under bondage for too long. I hope that these elections or candidates will be given a chance to campaign and expose our ideas, and that the elections will be fair and transparent.
You're only around 35 years old. Don't you think inexperience could be a hindrance in challenging a seasoned politician like President Paul Kagame?
I believe that the longer you are in politics, the more you lose touch with the people. People make it sound like it's such a hard thing, but politics is just understanding the issues of the country. And I think I have gone through hardships in my own life. I've seen people around me go through hardships under this regime. Who can better address an issue than the person who has been around people and seen what is going on?
Women's rights activist Diane Rwigara.
On social media, we're following how people have been responding to this story about the first female president if she's elected in August in the East African community. Now, someone going by the name Talkative Rocket says it's probably hoping against all hope that she will defeat Kagame, but that would be a welcome piece of history. First woman president in East Africa.
I'm also seeing here a comment from Egwando Tona Jeff, who says, I have a dream. Rwanda will set the pace for Africa. It's Africa's future diamond after the RAF genocide.
Peter Kloppenberg says, I normally say, let the best woman or man do the job. In this case, maybe it is better to let a woman do the job. Diane looks rather confident.
Sounds like a lot of positive comments coming here. Also, Ndumiso Dlamini commented and he says, I hope she has the interest of the Rwandan people and win.
Yes, indeed. Just to add on to that, Ibrahim from Adamawa State, Nigeria says, yes, this is a good intention. In Africa, we need the administration of women, mostly because women are favored and trusted than men. Well, but also we hope that she gets the job because she is qualified to do the job.
Indeed. It's actually nice to see that women are vying to stand for presidency in Africa.
Absolutely. And in case you're seated at home wondering, how can I contribute, go over to our Facebook page, DW Africa, and there you can leave your comments.
Thank you, and you're listening to Africa Link here in DW. This is Africa Link with me, Eunice Wanjiru.
And me, Wanjiko Mwaura.
Coming up in the next 15 minutes, as most Nigerians remain worried about the health condition of their president, Muhammadu Buhari, some are asking him to take his time and rest so as to fully recover.
Buhari was healthy before now, and now he's sick. The best thing we Nigerians should do is to pray for him, Allah to heal him, to bring back his health, and then give him the strength to continue with the good work he's doing.
Can you imagine writing on the internet and making a living out of it? We'll have more on that a little later on social media.
And also on this program, we have a look at racism in the football pitch on our sports segment. So don't go away. Nigeria's President Muhammadu Buhari made his first public appearance in weeks, and Nigerians remain worried about the health condition of their president weeks after he returned from London, where he was treated for an undisclosed illness. Buhari has skipped three cabinet meetings so far, and this has fueled more rumours about his health. The Information Minister, Lai Mohammed, says there is nothing to worry about since Buhari simply needs to rest and take a break from official functions as advised by his doctor. But some prominent Nigerians have advised President Muhammadu Buhari to seek urgent medical leave. Muhammad Al-Alamin reports.
It is not the first time speculations about Buhari's health condition make the headlines. Questions on Buhari's health and capacity to run the country started when he missed his third cabinet meeting at the presidential villa Abuja. 74-year-old Muhammad Buhari has been conspicuously absent from the public since return from a 7-week medical leave in London. And although he made a public appearance today, it may not be enough to quell the speculations about his health condition. Muhammad Ismail, an indigene of Lagos, southwestern Nigeria, is among Nigerians that plead with the president to seek urgent medical leave.
The incessant absenteeship of the president himself in person might just be giving some people some doubt anyway. For the benefit of himself and also for the nation, it is wise for him to still go back for the medical checkup if he needs one.
But Isa Modibo, resident of Maiduguri, Borno State Capital, says there is no need for apprehension over the matter.
Buhari was healthy before now, and now he's sick. The best thing we Nigerians should do is to pray for him, Allah to heal him, to give him, to bring back his health, and then give him the powers or the strength to continue with the good work he's doing, rather than calling for him to step down.
Many Nigerians have not forgotten the case of former President Umaru Yar'Adua, who died in 2010 while still in power. Sheikh Umar, a political analyst, called on Nigerians to be patient about the matter.
I think to be fair to convalescent President Buhari, I think he has made it abundantly clear on his return from his sick leave in UK some few weeks back when he said that he may need a lot of rest in Nigeria. So I think Nigerians should prepare adequately for this.
A report by Muhammad Al-Amin.
Isaac John from Tanzania says President Buhari should go for further checkup for on his health so that he will be fit for Nigerian service as a loved president for Nigeria. Get well soon, Mr. President, he adds. Now let's listen to another contributor.
My name is Isaac Aremu, Abeokuta, Nigeria. On the issue of Buhari and his health, I'm sure if he knows he can no longer go on with the job, I'm sure he will retire. However, I will want him to stay as long as possible due to the anti-corruption war. The fact that it's ongoing right now is because people are still afraid of him. Thank you. Have a wonderful day.
Blog Report.
History is not everything, but it is a starting point. History is a clock that people use to tell their political and cultural time of day. These are the words of Afro-American scholar Dr. John Henrik Clark, words that have inspired people like Maurice Wawero to blog about what many shy away from, that is Kenyan history. He started blogging 7 years ago, carving out a niche that has seen him telling African histories. His blog has factual stories such as 7 most brutal African serial killers or 7 unsolved murders of Kenyan women. His fascination with morbid topics is not accidental. He is, in fact, a forensic scientist, that is, someone who can use scientific methods to answer questions asked in a court of law. He started by telling me why he chose Kenyan histories.
Well, in how it was being written, and I couldn't really find stories I wanted to read. Some of them had all the information I needed, but they weren't readable. They weren't written for our generation. It was very post-colonial or colonial levels of naming Kenyans as natives and all that. I needed to find stories, and reading them wasn't enough, so I started sharing them.
7 years later, did you imagine OWA.com would grow to become what it is now?
Not at all, actually. When I started, the industry was so small and had very few people at the top and pretty much no money it has now. Oh, no, not really. But then I think over the next 2 or 3 years, it hit me that this was bigger than I thought. And I think every single day it hits me over and over again that I'm not even at the top yet.
You mentioned money, and on your blog, you actually have an open claim that some of the stories would be funded. Are you making a living out of blogging?
Yeah, the blog does pay quite a substantial amount of my bills and has for the last probably 4 years. How it does is I'm very big on telling people the truth. So promoted content is marked as promoted content. Post on the side is a post on the side. And I don't apologize for it. I just don't like being lied to when I'm reading something and then I realize it's promoted.
Telling people the truth is what you're saying. You've written, for example, about the 7 most brutal African serial killers. You've written about death a lot on your blog. Has this influenced your decision to remain anonymous?
The anonymity part is partially influenced by, of course, the kind of stories I do, but mostly influenced by the fact that I don't really like my face interfering with the kind of stories I do. And I also thrive in anonymity, like walking into a room and probably only one person knows me. Because otherwise, the security part, any of the people I've written the investigative pieces of, I've written about, and they really wanted to find me, would find me.
Would it ever come to a point where, if you had to choose family or a blog, what would you pick?
Frankly, every single time I think about that question, I think about how hard that decision would be. It hasn't come to it. Probably every single time I've thought about it, I oscillate between the two. I love my work. I love what I do. I don't know whether I could do anything else. But then again, this is my family and I love it.
But at the moment, you're running a topical blog and you have been nominated in the Bloggers Association of Kenya Awards.
This is the 4th year running and I'm still Leonardo DiCaprio. Yeah? So, like, I haven't won yet at all, which is fine by me because I set out to build a niche blog. And getting it out there, then I realized that there was so much more I could do. For example, 3 years ago with the Garissa attack, I realized I can use the brand I've built and the work I do to help to curate this story. It is primarily validated. It can be a bit worrying whenever I've done incredibly sensitive stories. And most of the feedback online, offline, from peers or international media is this is very movie-like. And then I feel like I lost the audience somewhere where they stopped feeling this was a real story and it became almost fiction.
I was speaking to Maurice Wawero in Nairobi.
Are you a blogger in Nigeria? Do you care about improving your environment? If the answer to all these questions is yes, then DW is calling on you to use your talent to inspire others and participate in the Digital Heroes Generation Nigeria competition. Go to dw.com/digitalheroesng and submit your best work that answers the question, what do you want to do about the environment? You can win a 2-week internship here at DW. But be fast, entries must be submitted by May 26th. For more details, check out dw.com/Africa.
You had right. Submissions are still open, so keep writing, keep sending them in, and I cross my fingers for you.
Now, time for sports. The 2016-2017 Bundesliga season is drawing to a close, and Bayern Munich has already won the league.
Yes, indeed. And with just a few matches left, the other three teams, that's Leipzig, Hoffenheim and Dortmund, are at the top of the table and are now vying for a chance to join Bayern in the UEFA Champions League.
And not to forget, the match to watch out for this coming on Saturday will be between Borussia Dortmund and Hoffenheim. These two are also there vying to join Champions League, to join Bayern Munich in the Champions League qualification.
Yes, indeed. And elsewhere in the news, Sally Muntari was banned for walking off the pitch following racist abuse in a Serie A game. He was tired of the racist insults during the Italian soccer match.
And he turned to the referee for help, who and the referee ended giving him a yellow card. And that's not how to combat racism. This is what DW Sports editor Heko Flores says.
My picture of the week is of Sully Montari being given a yellow card in Italian Stop Football League. Montari was not booked by the referee for committing a foul, but for demanding respect. Montari, who was born in Ghana, said that the fans shouted racial insults at him during the match. When he complained, the match official failed to act and decided to book him instead. Montari then walked off the pitch in protest, which earned him a second yellow card and a one-match ban. Unfortunately, racism is still a big problem in football. And even this isn't the worst racial abuse by fans. Bananas have been thrown onto fields, and even the N-word has been chanted at the Italian national team. Montari's incident shows that no progress has been made in the fight against racism in football. Players shouldn't have to take matters into their own hands, but it might be the only way to make a change. A United Nations official called Montari an inspiration for his protest. And the very least that we can do is stop games until everyone understands that the beautiful game cannot and will not go on like this.
DW Sports editor Heko Flores. And you can also find the picture of the week on our page. Just go to dw.com/Africa. Now, Wanjiko, let's listen to what's going on in the social media sector.
Well, first of all, this recent news in football has gotten lots of people talking about just racism in sports, not just football, but especially on in football. Josiah Mudira says, racism, especially directed towards African players, is a disease in Europe. Italian Football Association doing nothing on Montari racial slur is really bad. Meanwhile, Ghana Football Association actually went on Twitter and said that they are considering mooting a global proposal to FIFA to help curb racism in football. And they say that they will give more details after consultations. So I think this is also making more football associations in Africa, you know, respond to the issues that are going on, not just in Africa, but also in Europe when it comes to matters football.
Yeah, and do we have comments from our Facebook page as well?
Yes, indeed. Kamal from Nigeria says there should be 1 year jail on the fan that is found guilty of the offense, and he or she should write an official apology letter. Again, like I mentioned, this is something that lots of people have been commenting on, and you too at home can get in with the program. Go on to DW Africa and leave your comment there, and we still have maybe a few more minutes to read a comment or two, Eunice.
Yes, I can see here Tahiru Zakaria said, Ghana says racism in football nowadays is becoming too rampant, which calls for drastic steps to be taken to curb it. It is noticed that it comes much from fans of most of the teams, which is unfortunate, of course.
Yes, indeed. Ahmed Ibrahim says, my real disappointment here is with the match referee and the Italian Football Association, whose actions condones the behavior of racist fans. We really need to work hard if we want to kick racism from football and all kinds of life.
Okay, thank you, Anjiko. Enough of football. What else is trending on social media?
Well, there is a lot that's trending. I'm not even sure we have enough time to cater to it. But very quickly, regarding Buhari's health, Ahmed Ibrahim says Nigerians really deserve to know the health of the most important person in Nigeria.
Yes, they do. Well, that brings us to the end of this edition of Africa Link. Thank you for staying with us. Hope you join us again next week. I'm Eunice Wanjiru.
With me, Wanjiko Mwaura.
And not forgetting Zipporah Nyambura, Eliane Giladucci, our technician Manfred Toshka, and the entire Africa Link team. Goodbye and take care.